Vicki, thanks for the introduction, but I think we've been well served all this whole meeting. We've had some fabulous speakers, and it's always amazing. You know, I've gone to so many conferences, and sometimes I go, do I want to go to another one? I'm retired now, too. I am so glad I came here to hear some of the words. And John, your sister was amazing. She has a great story. So thank you for sticking around. It's Friday afternoon, and probably a lot of you guys want to go, so I hope I can give you some good information that will make your time very valuable, and you'll be well paid in thought and mind, and maybe some challenges as you leave here. You'll notice that to begin with, I want to clarify some things, then do give you a challenge. In the booklet, it says, plan wisely, live competently. Now, this was my original, when I put this together, and then we were at our very last meeting, and the BYU guy brought the program up, and he said, is there any change need to be made? And I looked, and I went, you need to, and then I thought from there, I says, what's competence, and what's confidence? So I thought from then, I said, you know, I think competence is more than competence. And so I went back and I looked at it. Competence is defined as a feeling or a show of being self-assured. Competence is defined as an ability to do something successfully and efficiently, a skill, a capacity, a proficiency, and most importantly, an achievement. So, if you want to plan wisely, that's what I'm going to tell you. The way to live competently is to plan wisely. And I think we all want, in our career and for our clients, we want to live competently. Because then it will be an achievement. So, and an accomplishment. So as I look today, I hope I can help you feel self-assured, which is very, very important. But I have a desire to encourage you to be more proficient and become an expert, and we've heard some great speakers that will help us do that. Be an expert in living financially secure yourself, and then also helping your clients do the same. You are their advisor, their coach, and it's important as you build your business and this career that you're helping them in the proper way. Now the challenge. It's fun that yesterday there was a lot of older people in this room. I see a lot of younger faces, so I'm happy to see that. But it was fun yesterday too, because we started talking about the boomers, and my gosh, there's some good stuff that we can be doing in our practice with just retooling a little bit and doing some planning, because there, as Steve, the wealth management guy, talked about, they're on that downside of climbing their Everest. Their plans have to change into a different area than the accumulation plan that they've put together. So there's opportunities galore, and I want to help explore it. So I want you guys to think critically for a minute about your role as a financial advisor. We heard that perfectly, what John's role was with Carla's and what impact that had in her life. And so as we build a business, as we build our career, you know, our job and our role is to assist the client in planning for their financial security and helping them execute on that through the career and the relationship we build with them. And because I've been around for 41 years now in this business, I believe that we are a very, very, have a very unique role, not only in our clients' lives, but in the security of this whole nation, and I'll get to that later on. Also, we have a really unique career proposition, and that is that the more people we help to be financially secure, we also become more financially secure. And so it's an action that creates the rewards, and this is a career that is absolutely fantastic in doing exactly that. So let's get started. And with that thought, we get started with, we're all human beings with the same mindset. We all have the same, we have different challenges, but we also have different opportunities that happen to us. But the question that we all have to ask ourselves is, how are we going to react to that? And I'm going to start with this little quote from Washington Irving. Great minds have purpose. Others have wishes. And you've got to figure out where you're at. Little minds are tamed and subdued by misfortune, but great minds rise above them. Now, how do we rise above them? We rise above them because we have a purpose. A purpose that maybe burns a little bit harder than anybody else's is burning to help. And I hope that we can get that within our career. And when you have that purpose, you're going to hear some stuff about Albert Gray. That is how great habits are formed. Now, if we don't have a purpose and just wishes, I just hope and hopes, then how easy is it for us to get sidetracked with the things that are happening in our lives? All the time. There's always something coming up. There's something to do over here. There's a neighbor's this. There's a church that. There's the sporting event this. And you know what? Pretty soon, we've lost our purpose. We're subdued by that. Now, Leo J. Muir also follows up. This is in a great book my father gave me. Someone has defined genius as intensity of purpose, the ability to do, and the patience to wait. This man that was standing here was talking to me about getting in the business. I said, don't even get in the business. You don't have the patience to wait. And he didn't have the financial reserves to be in there. But he wants to explore this business. I was honest with him. Patience to wait. You young guys are probably right in that level of, oh my gosh, is this going to make it? Those 5 years are tough to build a practice. And you're probably going to live like few people are with all your buddies out there doing better. But I can promise you, you do it right for these 40 years, you'll live like none of your buddies are able to live if you're doing the right things. What a powerful team of ability and patience. Men of great ability lacking patience to persevere fail miserably. A lot of people exit this industry. They don't have the time. Men with great ability. Men with great patience wanting ability are but drones. They just can't do anything. But put these two together, however, you have genius and you have achievement. And that's what we all want, is achievement. We want to help ourselves. Now, for the sake of this presentation, I'm going to change the word purpose up there, which often comes up, to the word plan. I'm taking a little bit of liberty. Because, again, a plan helps you define your purpose. And we've talked about, I'm going to put a great proponent for a design statement. In addition to a mission statement. A design statement is where you want to be in 5 to 10 to 15 years. And design it, and then start building with it. And that's what we will do with financial plans, and you're going to hear more about that, of how we're going to move forward in our lifespan through the financial challenges that we have as a family. So, I think we all, though, us and our clients want the same thing. And that's achievement. It's competency in life and in this career. So here's some things I think are very helpful as we get started. A very important message that is key. Bob Sharon is a friend of mine, Chicago. I've used him for consulting a lot. And this is my statement on what personal responsibility is. It is your results in this business, as in this life, will always be perfectly aligned with the actions that you take. So as you're thinking critically about your business right now, what actions are you taking? Are those actions moving you towards your purpose, your goals, what you want to get accomplished, the achievement? I want to ask you right now, tell you right now, personal responsibility, as I've heard a lot of people talk as the young kids, is kind of a unique idea. It's often challenged today in the day of entitlement. But I've always believed what Robert Sharon has said. So my challenge is to you is look critically at your business. What actions are you taking? Do you measure your activity? Do you report it to someone? Do you track it? Do you analyze it? Do you practice to improve it?
Those are questions that you now have to go back and start thinking about. We have been fed, and again, we get so much information, but you got to just take two or three ideas and start working on those things. This, I hope, will be one of them, that you start analyzing and measuring what you are doing on a daily basis to move your goals forward, just as you're going to be helping your clients. And I think in wanting to build your career, the very best thing there is the Granum system. We heard a great selling system, but I'll tell you, I told Steve that 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 of his rules were all part of this book and part of the planning process with our clients. This is the one card system. How many here have heard of Al Granum? Okay, good. NAFA has this. If you're a member of NAFA, you can get a discount on this system. And it's a system that helps you keep your business moving in the proper way. It's built on activity measurement. 10-3-1. You know what the 10-3-1 is? You've heard that? It's a one-card system. Robert Carlson, president or vice president of LIMRA, which serves our industry well, said the profit is not in the sale. It's in the relationship. So who knows what the 6 and 8 is on this number, Granum believers? 6 to 8. Thank you very much. There's a good disciple there. Now, if you believe that, there's the patience to wait, right? You start building. And there's 3 sales on the first one with Granum, right? You've got to sell yourself. You've got to sell the company, and you've got to sell the need. But every other time you're out there selling, what? It's only one sale. It's the new need. It's the new need, whatever that need is. And that need can be defined by the plan that you've put together. That's why it gets easier and easier and easier as you go along with the clients that you have built. But not building clients won't help you. And this is why Granum has said, soon, this system is very helpful, soon one can begin to forget commitments, thereby losing regular touch with good suspects that just aren't ready to meet with you, good prospects that you've met but they aren't ready to sell, and great clients. When that happens, relationships suffer. You need a system. And, you know, I love the system that this, you know, that has been, some of the things have been said in this meeting with Steve. But he could have used Larry Bozzetti's from the execution book. Systems run businesses. People run systems. And if you don't have a system, if you're winging it by yourself, then no one's going to be telling you on Tuesday to be calling this person, or on this age change to be getting in touch with this person, or this policy anniversary you have this to be needing to be done. So if you don't have an individual system, you can get them. You can get it right here with NAFA membership. You don't have to be a member, but it'd be great to join if you are a member and get a discount on that. Now, another thing that came up, oops, I think I went jumped one ahead. Harvard Law School had nothing to do, I think it was more for lawyers, but when I saw this, I thought, that is a great quote. To the extent you are prepared, you will significantly impact your desired outcomes. Now, sometimes their outcomes are death to an individual, the sell or not sell of a proper business and stuff like that. That may have a lot of impact. Guys, don't we impact people's lives every day we're being there? And if we're prepared, that certainly will help us be self-assured, but also be competent. How do you get prepared for things? And what are you supposed to be doing, or are we supposed to be doing, with our clients to make sure that when we go to them, we are fully prepared to help them in the best way we possibly can? And that is, I'm going to get to in a little bit better, what we want to do to help us be prepared to have the outcomes we want our clients to have, which will benefit us in the long term. Now, Albert Gray, y'all know who Albert Gray is. I have to laugh, too, with the group here. I mean, everyone knew who Albert Gray was, 70% of the room last yesterday, because we're all old. And all the young ones, who's Albert Gray? But the common denominator is success. It's as true today as it's true. It's just, again, coincide with Granham's activity. His comment was, the success that every man who has ever lived, ever been successful, lies in the fact that he has formed the habit of doing things that failures don't like to do. Now, Vicki, and I see one other lady up there. I'm so glad to see ladies here. But in 1940, when this was quoted, he did just say men. But in our business, it's fun to see more and more women. And women control more and more of the finances of the world. And it's nice having you two here, but don't take offense with Albert Gray. He's just an old guy, you know, with that statement. But what habits do we need to be forming? If we want to be prepared, what habits do we want to be forming? That's a great question. And he also said, why are successful men able to do the things they don't like to do while failures are not? Because successful men have a purpose, have a business plan, have a personal plan, all that wrapped up together, which is a purpose strong enough to make them form the habits of doing the things they don't like to do in order to what? Accomplish something. To accomplish the purpose they want to accomplish. And again, I am really proud of bumping in. I have a blast bumping into people in Las Vegas, bumping into people back east. And they're coming up wrapping me, hugging me, and it's not just because we're friends. They then talk about, I am so glad you got me started doing things when I was in school. I was an intern with Northwestern. One of my buddies jumped up my arms, and I hadn't seen him in 15 years. But you know that policy you sold me when I was a student, and it was hard to pay? That paid for my wife or my daughter's wedding, you know. It was a tough time, and she was getting, we didn't want to do another one on the mission, and where were we going to get that money? Raj said this would be money for missions. It could be. Again, those are things that are in the plans for life that we are able to touch people's lives with. Very, very unique. Helping them accomplish what they want to get accomplished. And that's all designed by a plan. Now, here are the pillars of financial planning that I'm going to go through. And as you look at your practice, I hope, you know, we've had some, Steve mentioned it several times, he has a process of a whole bunch of different things, but the one thing he said it all starts with a plan, doesn't it? If I'm going to do all this planning for you, I want to make sure that you're going to do something with me. That's how he's kind of identifying it very, very quickly. But financial planning starts, I think, with a commitment to the Granham relationship. That's going to keep you in the business. It's a full fact finder in writing. And again, what Steve mentioned was before he's going to go through all that work, he wants to make sure he's in the ball game to be able to get something closed. And it's a written plan for every client. We call it a PPA with Northwestern. It's a personal plan analysis. And it's quite comprehensive. It helps, first, it helps every client develop a habit of savings. Now, that is a novel idea also, savings. Income continuation on both spouses, making sure each one has the survivorship that's so important. Disability income, especially in today's world where we have two incomes who are making the family work. Survivorship, disability, and the emergency fund. We've heard about that at this meeting. A plan for expected obligations. You know, what was the plan in 208 and 209 for every investment opportunity or every emergency? Tap into the equity of our homes, which were valued very high, and then it dropped very low. A lot of people got in trouble during that time. Those that had a plan for expected obligations didn't have to worry about that. long-term care, education, care for your children. And then, again, we've talked about the need for a plan for retirement accumulation, on one side climbing up the mountain, and distribution, a different plan for spending down the other side of the mountain. That plan needs to be updated and update the written plan and goals annually. That's how come you have an annual review, and the system of the Gretna system will help you keep in touch with those people to say it's time to have a review. And then implement it with the best products you can get. Products that you're comfortable with, you feel will meet the needs and the priorities of the people at that time. Now, for the sake of time, I got a little bit long yesterday. I'm not going to show this. I'm going to show this, but not talk much about it. It's not a slogan or a prospecting. And it's not just selling investments or just talking about risk. It's not just an illustration. But I can promise you, a plan like that, going through all that, is a way to be viewed differently. And didn't Steve mention that today? Be viewed as someone different, not a salesperson, but a person helping someone else accomplish their goals, not accomplishing what the agent wants. And I'm going to talk to you about how it's a way to sell more insurance and to build more assets under management. So what does really good planning entail? We have a proprietary financial plan that was set up by Navistar, and we kind of switched things around. But I jumped on the internet, Googled financial plans. So if you don't have, if you're not associated with a organization that has their own proprietary software, just Google financial planning software. There is one company that offers 25 different types of plans. Just on the first page of the 10 pages of Google, on the things on Google, there was 37 companies I could talk to about getting a personalized planning software. They weren't doing the planning for me, but I could tap in as a rep. If I was an independent rep, I could tap into a planning tool that allows me to competently assist a person throughout their lifetime, and shows the Monte Carlos we talked about yesterday and different things. It shows everything with investments. It shows distribution plans afterwards, and it shows whether the person is going to be competent, should be competent, or whether they're in a mess. And if they're in a mess, what then the plan has to be a little bit different. That's the debt reduction. It starts with a good discovery agreement. After you have that first visit, send them a letter back thanking them for the opportunity of learning more about them and what you're going to be talking about when you come back with this plan. It's a checkpoint on the family budget. It's income and lifestyle protection, and we've seen that, the emergency fund, life, and disability. It's beyond that. It's the wills and the trust. It's helping them start or continue on or improve a systematic savings and investing strategy. My worry is so many people don't have advisors, so they have a lump sum of 401ks, and they think they're going to be safe with a big, large number. And then they get a big downturn, and what do? They have no emergency money, no cash value in life insurance, no other assets. So what do they start doing? They start selling their assets at all the wrong time, which, as you heard, if you do that in the first 10 years, the chances of your success in retirement, it's wasted. So it's debt management. It's property liability coverage. And I know Vicki here is a State Farm rep. State Farm, great service, and Double Check. I'm from Green Bay too, but you're not using Double Check anymore. Aaron isn't one of your spokesmen. But Double Check saved one of my reps' life, because she understood property and liability insurance. So when she was driving her brand new nice car, not a down the road, and some guy came off the freeway on 90th South and didn't even stop at the stop sign or the stoplight, which is red, full bore, T-boned her. And he had had his double check with a company that was, what's the one that's the 15 minutes and saves you a lot of money?
Okay.
Well, how they saved a lot of money was they minimalized the liability down to the state limits. What are the state limits? $25,000 and $15,000 for medical and, $3,000 per medical. Now, do you know this? Write this down if you don't know it, because this is something you can help a financially secure person just by giving good positive information. $15,000 for the accident.
$25,000
for the accident. $65,000 if it's more than one person.
And then you shoot $25,000 for property damage.
$25,000 for property damage and $3,000 medical. Okay, she had a $65,000 car total, a 3-month-old car. The ambulance, jaws taken out, medical everything, to race her to the hospital, was all used up literally in the first 4 hours. All that, I mean, way past that. She was in intensive care for 4 days, then 6 months in complete physical rehab, and the guy that hit her had just switched to save a couple hundred bucks. Well, now it's subrogation, is that what they call it? Because this girl, this lady, knew the value she had, the top amount of underinsured and uninsured. How many drivers out there are uninsured in the state of Utah? I think the number is over 30% of the people driving cars today are uninsured. Uninsured. And then the other ones maybe are just minimal. And you have a wonderful little business going and you're happy. Luckily, this lady had great disability income and great long-term care because she was for a year out of work. She couldn't get out of, I mean, her hips crushed and stuff.
Tremendous pain.
Yeah, and pain, and so she still walks with a limp and stuff. But she's okay, you know, she didn't have to die. How many of your people don't even understand the property, and you know, maybe get a relationship with the property and casualty person to help them. But if you don't, that's planning and assisting the client in all areas. That's comprehensive planning. Long-term care, retirement distribution, we're hearing a lot about that, and where they want to be living a legacy, and then specific recommendation with actionable next steps for the rep and the client. Because, you know, sometimes people aren't ready to do everything they have in a plan. That's the value of what we're doing here. We're now, with a good plan, you are now putting a roadmap for them to get to some destination that you'll check back and see. You can't drive all the way to California with one tank of gas unless you have a big, huge tank of gas, I guess. But you have to stop and fuel up every once in a while. My one rep just bought a Tesla. And he showed me how cool their little Tesla screen is, how they already have their roadmap out to California, and how we can stop at each station so they can always fill up and get energized again. You know, that's what we're doing with our planning process, that roadmap. And that really builds the relationship. Now, let's just take a look at what clients. Mark Eaton has a good seminar that he gives. And he starts it off with saying, what you need to discover is what do your clients want? So here's some good information. The question was asked, buyers who consider their financial representative to have addressed broad financial needs are significantly more satisfied. Well, let's take a look at what they say there. Here's the financial rep. The financial rep that address just the single need. That's the yellow one. Just here's a quick sale for you. Here's a quick idea. 22% they were happy with. 36% were happy with the Northwestern Mutual. But look what, if they address their full financial broad-based plan. Look at that. Look at the glue that's keeping that client there. This was a study in about 7 cities across the United States with several thousand people that were all Northwestern Mutual clients. And no one knew, I mean, they were just picked and invited to a meeting with an outside vendor who was doing this study. Broad-based planning. And then, look at this. Willing to refer. If you were a planner, 55%, 7%, and we wonder why we don't get referrals often. The work we do, let's enhance our value in the eyes of the client. And then consider for future insurance. Yeah, they'll buy more insurance, but if you're have a full plan there, you kind of know when you are going to need to be buying some more insurance. And consider for future investments. Wow, look at that number. At first, if you were just selling a life insurance policy, they'd pigeonhole you as a life insurance rep. But now, future investments. You're going to help me with the four. You're going to help me do that accumulation. Help me do this. And I need to do that when I start this. That's what the plan will help them do. Interesting numbers. Now, we think it's generational. Oh, people don't care. This is where the old should be very happy and the young will be ecstatic. Here's the silent and baby boomers. What consumers? Now, these were not Northwestern. These were not clients of Northwestern. They, again, just did another study. Silent generation. Consumers say they still want to do planning, 87%. And we think we'll do some planning, 65%. That's a 20% range, more of an interest. So maybe that should encourage you to call some of your existing clients back and let's revisit a plan. Let's charge up your battery again. How about boomers? 63%. And I think what's interesting on that, and this is just my thought, 63% is less than the silent, but they're younger. I'm afraid that most of our boomers, we don't think that they're interested in that. But yet 85% of them say they are. They want someone to help them with their planning. We may think that they're getting too close to it. They don't want to do that planning. They need us. And then great news for the millennial generation, which is the X and Y. We've talked about that. You may be thinking, oh, I've got to only work with people who have money. I'm going to tell you, work with people who don't have money. I shouldn't say that. That's not quite right. Work with people who can help you, but you can help them and are in a position, qualified position, and they would have some money. But younger people, do they have a need? Well, Generation X, 74%, is what they say, and we're thinking only 21% would be interested in the plan. And then the younger ones, well, 73% want the help, and 7% we think. That's what the Northwestern rep thought. Well, why work with them? They're not even that interested. The millennial generation, which is the last two, you'll see a little slide here, and then makes up a huge amount as big as the baby boomers. But they have a total different mindset, and I'll hit that in a minute. In fact, getting to that mindset, let me ask this question. What did you learn from your parents about money? Think about that for a minute. What about money, savings, investing, and financial security from your parents? I'll talk a little bit later about what I learned from my father and my mother. And I don't know whether that's the same as your folks, but But generationally, in I can tell you what, a lot of things were happening. But just think a minute. Then go a little fast forward. What are we teaching our children? Are we teaching them the same lessons? Have we taught them to be entitled? Have we taught them to work? You know, the value of work? Those are some tough questions that we need to think about, too. All right, here's the baby boomers. 79 million baby boomers, and we heard what? 50,000 of them are retiring every day or something like that. Most of the baby boomers have not been responsible when it comes to finances. I mean, with all the opportunities that they have had, that we have had, a lot of them haven't taken advantage of that. And they're needing help. Some of them we can't really help because they're no more planned. They're poor savers, generally. A lot of them still carry debt. That's why their homes, a lot of baby boomers lost their homes during the 98 and 2008 and 2009, because that's where their savings was, in their equity of their home. But they didn't ever learn to control debt, and they thought that wasn't debt, perhaps. They believed from their parents that corporate benefits would be wonderful, and the Social Security system would just take care of them. I can tell you, I learned that from my folks because my mom and dad loved Social Security. They thought it was great. They put in very little, and they were getting big checks every month as they got older. Well, what's the future in that situation? We heard from the debates on Monday night that, was it 7 or 8 years, and they could be bankrupt? You know, I never talked to my folks much about money. Didn't understand money. I was taught that it was bad manners to talk about other people or money, so I didn't learn very much about money. We had little or no planning, and life expectancy was 68. Now, when life expectancy is 68, do you need to plan very long for retirement? So you can see why some of the baby boomers, especially the silent generation, that's okay. But that was a feeling that has happened. What have we taught our children, which are the millennial generation? This is great news. Oh, not too health conscious either. But now what's happened? The millennial generation, which is 76 million echo boomers, you could say, very financially responsible. You know, I got married because I met a girl that I loved, and it was, I mean, there was nothing else that mattered at that point. And finances wasn't even thought about getting married. I don't know if some of you baby boomers are the same way. We just figured we'd make it no matter what. Going to school, we had a little kid 10 months after we were married. You know what? My kids right now, boy, they've waited, they've delayed getting married, they've got their education, you know, they didn't want to have debt, so they worked hard. I mean, it's a whole different ballgame, isn't it? They are very financially savvy, too. They're great savers. They don't like debt. They don't trust corporations or Social Security. And they're financially informed. They're opened up to a planning process. They want someone to talk to them to do that. They're great planners, and they want help. Life expectancy is 76 for a male and 81 for a female. Now, when we say life expectancy, that is one half of the men will have died by 76 and one half the female by 81. That means the other half is still living. Are they going to be in the haves or the have-nots at that level? Now, and they're very health conscious. So with that thought, I would hope you young people there can realize, as you're building a practice, build it with a system and build it around planning. Because when you build that relationship and you do a good job keeping in touch with that client, you have a long-term relationship. and you'll have them for your lifetime. We see it all the time. In my business, in our agency, all the time, people come in. Jeremy Bartle's up there in the back. His father, I know he has hundreds of visits by his father's clients who come in and thank him for what Steve's done in their planning, and he's carrying on that planning. So why is planning important? I'm going to tell you this right now. Nick Murray addressed our annual meeting this last year, and everybody know who Nick Murray is? He's a guru in the investment world. But in 1857, Northwestern Mutual, the average age of dying was 41. 1857 when Northwestern started. You know, first death claim here was by a Ute Indian killing a guy from Wisconsin, and that was in 1880. That was in 1883. That was our first death claim. In 2015, the average expectancy for male was 79 and woman 83. That changed because that slide I put up was a two-year-old slide. I couldn't change it. Now, in 2 years, it's gone up 1 year on both of them. If a man is 65, again, life expectancy is 50% of the people alive or dead. But if you reach 65, then you're going to live to 87, which is the 50% point. And the woman who's 65 will live beyond 90. And the average life expectancy of the second death of a married couple is 94. So Murray was very good in saying, if you don't have a plan, the risk today is living too long and outliving your money. How do you plan for 29 years of income after retirement? You have to plan that distribution very, very importantly. Okay, I've got about 5 minutes left. So I'm going to pass on to a couple more things that, just quick. We've found, this is studies from Northwestern, that if you do broad-based planning and you're viewed that, you're going to have it'll be 2 times more likely to sell more life insurance, 15 times more likely to buy investments, and 25% more chance to be referred. That's the value of a good system and a good planning system. So 3 observations I have. Discipline. Every person that I've seen that's been disciplined and patient and doing what he or she should be doing usually ends up being very successful. And so the discipline part of this, discipline is forming the right habits early in life. Following a plan in your business and your life to align your actions to get the results you want. Do you have a business plan? Which breaks it down to what actions do I have to be taking to build my business? Live within your means. Form the habit of living within your means. I just got back from the ethics class. Every one of the stories that were told, people living outside their means. I got in the business, again, these are baby boomers' times. It was a fake it to make it. Use your credit cards. Remember those big seminars at good dinners. Get as many credit cards as you can get. You know, times are different. Live within your means and start saving 10 to 20% of your income, planning it wisely. Ben Franklin, this is from my father. Ben Franklin, he told me several times, I'm quoting my father, but he was quoting Ben Franklin. Contentment makes poor men rich. Discontent makes rich men poor. So really, it's up here is where we start forming the habits. Are we chasing our neighbor? Are we chasing Madison Avenue and all the advertising that says life is really good if you have this or have that? Or are we being quietly thinking, here's my plan. I want to have the peace of mind that comes from knowing that I've done the best with the talents and the skills that I've had, and I've lived within my means. Therefore, I can live the next 30 years probably within my means if I've saved wisely 10 to 20% of that income. Now, the next thing is the patience. This was a, this is dated a little bit, but it's coming up. I can see it coming again as we're starting to hear the interest rates and some promises of some higher things coming. Patience in a microwave world where everyone wants things now, they forget the best ally they have is the compounding interest. Their ally is the magic of compounding interest. If you want to be a millionaire and you start at age 15, by 65 you can be a millionaire at a 0% return. It just takes 50 years of discipline. But look what happens if you're a little bit disciplined and you're wise with the plan of money. Cut in half with the magic of compounding interest. You can start at 34 and be there, $20,000 a year. The next one, 8% is 20 years. The next one's 10, 12, and 15. Again, in the ethics, someone said, hey, we're promising you this note for 12% interest. Well, there is a point of diminishing returns when the investment risk is greater than the time saved in reaching the goal. And again, if you're disciplined and you have a plan, you know what you will probably be getting based on your tolerance of risk. But a jump from 8% to 15%, which is double almost the risk you have, you're only saving 25% of the time. I'll end with this. That's our leadership. Leadership. Anybody know who Peter G. Peterson is? Website, go to it, look at it. Very interesting article. U.S. Secretary of Commerce under Nixon. Went into Lehman Brothers, president of that, left, went back into public service, then turned around and co-founded Blackstone Group. In 2008, he sold Blackstone Group for several billion. He funded with an endowment of $1 billion the Peter G. Peterson Foundation with the mission to focus on the raising public awareness about the need for long-term financial sustainability. Now, here again is the point that I want to really end with. We want to help our clients. They're part of this great country where we have great freedom. But it's us, the United States of America. All of us are challenged, but there are good news. There is good news. Their bold mission was to increase public awareness of the nature and urgency of the key physical challenges threatening America's future and to articulate actions and accelerate actions on them. To address these challenges successfully, they say, we work to bring America together to find and implement sensible long-term solutions that transcend age, party line, and ideological divides in order to achieve real results. Again, they want to achieve. This is not a political group. They have seminars and they have big conferences, and it's Republican and Democrats working together. Because they're worried about our spending and our borrowing habits as a country, and they're worried about what that means for the future of our children and grandchildren. 23 pages they have about what the United States politically situation is, 2 pages on state government, and the last page is this page, page 26. And this is what we do for our clients. They say, what can you do as individuals? Establish a personal budget and stick to it. Wasn't that one of the pillars we talked about? Formulate a financial plan that considers the following questions. What are my short-term and long-term personal objectives? What major milestones do I need to prepare for education, family, and retirement? When do I see myself retiring? How much do I need to save and invest? See, if you're in the habit of savings, you can easily go out and do investing. To reach retirement and live at a comfortable level that can be maintained over time. And this is our role. even if people have a plan, they will not act on it unless someone is encouraging them. If we do the work and give them the plan, they see what they have to do, they'll have a purpose because they have a plan. And then we're there to encourage them along the way to start doing the things they need to be doing for themselves. They, as Steve said, will buy because it's part of the plan. And it's their need, because our role is to put that personal financial plan into immediate action. They won't. We are the ones that will be the catalyst to get them to put that plan into immediate action. Become more responsible in decisions to spend and use credit and save for the future and invest savings wisely. Save for the future, invest savings wisely. How many people invested wisely when they took all their equity of their home and put it over here? Because they didn't have a plan. See, a plan will dictate what they want to do with their investments. Teach your children the importance of planning, savings, budgeting, investing, and making responsible use of credit. Well, that's my message. I've loved being in this industry for 41 years. I find great joy in seeing good people, and I be successful in this business. And I hope all of you the best of success as we go on for this next year till the next conference. And I'm sure from the messages that have been spoken at this conference here, Grant Taggart would be really happy. Thanks.